Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. For our international listeners, the podcast will be held mostly in English. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. Episode 70, recorded December 22, 2022. This is an anniversary episode. It's number 70. It's a special episode, and it's with a very special person also. Today, my guest is Patricia Danda, who just took on the post as head of the curatorial department at Kunstsammlung Nordrhein-Westfalia, K20, K21. Hi, Patricia. Very nice to have you.
Hi, Daniela. Thank you for having me.
So, Patricia, we're starting always from the beginning. What were your beginnings?
Yeah, I guess my beginnings are a bit different beginnings than those of many other people working in the field in my position. So, I came to the arts for an interest, a personal interest, something that I probably inherited from my father, who was an avid reader of art books, art catalogs, but also an avid visitor of exhibitions and as an engineer. And I myself have a diploma in psychology. I started getting interested in art, I guess, during my studies. It's not something I always loved. So the classical situation, our father was dragging us into exhibitions and we felt this to be rather annoying or boring,
yes.
Very bizarre. And his fantasies of a wonderful weekend were not exactly the ones that we had, but it was always there. And I guess it lingered and it popped up again at a moment where I started to understand that there is a connection to my own life that I would see reflected in production and artworks.
Isn't it also a connection to your own life and psychology? I find that very interesting that you first studied psychology. I find that also actually in combination with art, a very good combination. But you just understood during your studies of psychology that actually you would like to do something with the arts?
Well, two things. So first, I would say that the understanding of psychology from a field of art is very different from what academic psychology actually is.
Mm.
So the notion of psychology I grew up with is really very much a self-understanding as a social science. It's very empirical. It's very experiment-based. It's much less the humanities, actually, than you would imagine. All the theories coming from psychology that have become so important in the visual arts didn't play as much of a role in my education. So I guess that's also the big gap that I experienced in terms of really not finding the things that would excite me or mm-hmm. that would, yeah, relate to my life in a very direct and immediate way. So it was not a studies where I had the feeling it's really connected to what happens out there, the context I find myself in. This sounds pretty paradoxical because you would imagine psychology to be just that, but it wasn't.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would imagine, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What was your personal feeling then? You were looking for something more humane, something more personal, something more mm-hmm. related with yourself. And what was the young Patricia? Who was mm-hmm. yourself then?
Well, the young Patricia was pretty young. So I finished school very early. I'd entered school at the age of 5. We were in Norway at the time. So I was put into a German class rather than in a Norwegian class. And that was bringing me to school earlier than I would usually have started in Germany. And so I finished my school already at the age of 18, which is also pretty early in German terms. And I was a kid that was good in school and I had an interest in like the humanities, but also I thought like psychology is maybe the gap between humanities and then something you can find a job with.
Mm-hmm.
So very über ich thinking about what alive should be or could be. And so I started studying psychology and to be honest, I think I probably just didn't have the guts to stop studying it, although I realize it's not really grabbing my attention. I'm good at it, but I'm yeah, it's not moving me. And then, I don't know, I had half a year of studies abroad in Milan, and I ended up spending time more in contemporary art galleries and museums and exhibitions, and it felt like an adventure. It felt adventurous to enter spaces that you didn't even know if you're allowed to be there as an outsider, like really going to galleries, having a gallery guide in my hand, and exploring these art spaces that are not those spaces where a regular audience would necessarily happen to be or find themselves. And that was a moment when I realized there are things happening, there are things being discussed that are so important for my own life and for my understanding of my personality. I mean, that was in the late 1990s, and all these body discourses, these identity discourses that were, I mean, that are probably important for every young person at the age in their early 20s or something, were just so much discussed in the art at the time. And that's how it grabbed my attention and how I was captured by a world that is, I don't know, bizarre and different, but at the same time, very closely related to the things and topics that I was interested in and that troubled me.
And so the first job in the art world that you had then was at a gallery?
Well, let me think. It was different steps. So the first job was probably in a gallery, but the first contact zone was an internship that I actually did in Düsseldorf, where I'm back now.
Well, that's a big leap from studying psychology to really having an internship at the Kunstverein in Düsseldorf.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that was when I had already finished my studies. So I had this PhD position at the university. Yeah, I had my diploma. Everything was set in place for me to write my PhD. And as it often is, it was an academic position at the university in Bonn at the time, which means you're paid a half salary and the other half of the time you're expected to write your PhD. And I had the sense that before I do that, I should find out what it is that captures me about art. And then, I don't know, it was really a lucky coincidence because I had seen Rosa Barber's work in an exhibition in Cologne about KHM students, and I was fascinated with her work. And then I saw that there's this exhibition in Düsseldorf at the Kunsthalle. And so I decided to take the trip from Bonn and travel to Düsseldorf to see the exhibition. And by accident, that was on a Wednesday evening or Wednesday late afternoon when Rita Kersting, the former director of the Kunstverein or the director at the time, she always gave a guided tour for the exhibition. And so I happened to join her guided tour through a Sam Durant exhibition, and we started talking. And then she invited me to the Kunstverein, and I told her about my interest, and she was like, yeah, if you want to figure it out, why don't you start with an internship here? And that's what I did.
That's a leap of faith.
Amazingly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't even say how much I owe her.
Wow. Yeah, because from there on, it's just like you just dove, like diving into the waters without being really prepared.
Yeah. It was so important to get this opportunity that changed everything. And yeah, I never looked back. I mean, there was a period of probably a year that it took me to transition from my job at the university in Bonn and to decide that I really need to quit, which wasn't an easy decision because everything had gone super straight in my life until then. It was super clear. Yeah. And then suddenly I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then, yeah. I just went for it. And ever since I did, I never looked back, and it felt right.
It was right. But how did you then, where others, you know, they study art history for many years, or some study maybe art, but most of the museum curators or people at Kunstvereins, at institutions, they come from this classical art historical background and have certain knowledge and know how to write in a certain way, for example, scientifically or whatever. Yeah, how did you get that, what you needed for the jobs to come?
Curiosity.
Mm.
I guess, I mean, no, really, you know, I started in contemporary art. So contemporary art is probably that part of the discipline that's less taught. So you needed to see a lot of stuff. You needed to go and see exhibitions, a lot of them, like crazy. And with every exhibition, with every conversation, my knowledge grew. And it's a different kind of knowledge, I guess, than the one that you would acquire in an art history training mm-hmm. or education, because I had to compose it for myself. So many of those discourses really only started making sense to me much later. I guess I still remember very well what it meant to look at art without having this canonical or canonized knowledge that you usually get when you study the discipline. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, maybe that also allowed for a portion of freedom and also for a productive non-understanding or misunderstanding. And so I basically looked at tons of exhibition. I bought books like crazy. I was reading. I was excited about it and I wanted to learn more. And I learned continuously with every project, with every show, with every artist that I met. Yeah. And now it's been so long that it's not even true that I studied something else, you know.
Yeah, I know you since your days in the Kunstverein and also the white light space you did then in Düsseldorf, which had really a challenging and interesting and very alive program at that time.
Yeah.
So why did you feel that you had to do that exhibition space to find your own language together with Akiko Bernhoft, I have to say. So you were two women.
Yeah, exactly. We were co-curating the program, but there's a history to it that actually predates the working on it with Akiko Bernhoft. Basically, mm-hmm. the opportunity offered itself in an amazing way. So White Light was the former exhibition space of Julia Stoschek's residency program. That was in a time before she decided to go public with her collection. So there was a space. And Katrin Jentjens had worked as a head this exhibition space curatorial program. So she knew about the exhibition space. And Katrin had asked me if I wanted to do it with her, which was amazing. I liked Katrin a lot. I really appreciated what she was doing and thinking and writing. And so we decided we were going to do it. But then Katrin and Anja Dorn got selected as directors, co-directors of Kunstverein in Köln. And it was clear that she wouldn't be able to do both. And that's how I was lucky enough to be granted yet another leap of faith, the opportunity to use the space. And Akiko and I decided to do it together. Yeah, that's how it came about. And we wanted to show practices that didn't have a platform in Düsseldorf. And it ended up being artists from different places in Europe. And a lot of artists were actually engaged in a performative practice, not necessarily just performance, but really thinking about performativity and the way we look at the world and stuff like that. So it was a pretty open program and had amazing artists, some of whom I'm really still very closely connected with. Ever since, I'm quite happy we were able to do that in a brief period of a year.
It had impact. I mean, I remember that. I think I saw every show at that time.
That's very nice to hear. Yeah, I loved doing it.
It was a really special place and it showed a super sensitive touch and just a deep connection to art and the artists. That's a rare thing. It's not to be taken for granted that somebody can do that. I remember there was an interview you gave. There are not so many interviews publicized, but there's an interview. You got the opportunity of a job at Haus der Kunst in Munich. And in this interview, you said that you were even not aware how male the canon was.
Yeah.
If we talk now about the canon, because now probably you can not forget the canon, but the canon is so much challenged right now, or we have to write a whole new canon because so many people were excluded from the canon. Mm-hmm. And you said that you just got to be aware of that when you had your job in Munich.
Mm. Yes, it's true. And looking back, it's really nice to see how intuitively that was already part of the program mm-hmm. at White Light in terms of also presenting women artists, mm-hmm. queer artists, and I mean, for the limits that were available to us, right? It was a small space. We had like a few hundred bucks for each exhibition. It wasn't a big budget. It was very hands-on. But still, we were able to bring, I don't know, Cezary Bojanowski or Jimmy Robert was part of the program, Susanne Winterling, Daniel Müller-Friedrichsen. So a number of artists that I'm still very happy we worked with, Katrin Sonntag. And yeah, So the program kind of reflected an openness and an interest that got legible also for myself, really, in its complexity later on. But then, yeah, the interview that you're mentioning, that I think that was in Freeze.
Yes.
At some point, yeah, speaks again from a retrospective viewpoint. You know, after being in Düsseldorf, I had the opportunity to return to Munich, where I was born, and I was able to start working as assistant curator at Haus der Kunst at the time when Chris Durkin was the director of the institution. And I loved Haus der Kunst. It was really one of the most inspiring institutions for me. And I think precisely because it was such an amazingly open space, so many different things were happening there. It was such a complex and exciting understanding of what art, and in the case of Chris's period at Haus der Kunst, even cultural production at the time, could be looking at architecture, at design, at fashion, at visual arts, photography. Yeah, so if there had been one place in Germany that I wanted to go, it was the Haus der Kunst, and I was just lucky enough, yeah, to be able to do it.
Yeah, and then you suddenly understood that most artists that were shown were men.
Yeah, that took me another while, to be honest.
Yeah.
Really, the art world has been in such a big transformation in the last years. And of course, all these discussions about the representation of female artists and their exclusion in the canons, etc. I mean, it's a discussion that we're not the first generation to have. I mean, it's really a recurrent theme of feminist practices for many, many decades and now even centuries, probably. But it always comes under new premises.
But probably the first time it has consequences. I mean, real consequences now in the present time. I mean, we're talking about now about a time which is also a couple of years in the past. Mm. But acquisitions by museums, exhibitions, et cetera, it's probably not already completely equal, but it's so much better than it was 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's better. It's still not good enough.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's the first time it has consequences. I guess our work would not be possible if there hadn't been the work of the previous generations and they did lay the ground and now suddenly it becomes visible. But I wouldn't say we're safe in this respect.
Sure, it's challenged not only in the art world, but the art world is part of that bigger world which challenges so many thoughts of equality and freedom.
Yeah, and moments of emancipation have always seen backlashes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that there's stability, but I guess our time, our generation is paving the ground for a next generation. I just don't think that it's going to be a continuous evolution or a continuous development to the better. It's going to be a time where things are working better. And then there's going to be a time where things, where we'll see like crazy conservative backlashes. Mm-hmm. And we do see them already in parts. And so, yeah. I guess it's a complex situation, but still, I would totally agree. It's great that all these questions have become so visible, so relevant, so acute in their like societal awareness that it's really impossible at the moment to go back behind it.
Absolutely. And also that feminist, you know, it used to have this, at some point, a negative connotation. Mm. And I think now we can just like proudly say, yeah, I'm a feminist. And everybody says, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, to be honest, it took me a long time to get there. But again, you know, we work in a field that has been incredibly sexist, in a field that has been incredibly unequal. And I don't know. I think it's really through the work in this context that I understood how important it is to be a feminist.
When you were at Haus der Kunst, did these discussions also start there for you, or you, at least or your internal process, or how did you go on from there? What were the exhibitions you were included in, and how did you develop? How did you kind of like grow up in this world?
I mean, at the Haus der Kunst, at the time when Chris was there, we were doing really great programs. There was, I don't know, Yayoi Kusama project, or a really beautiful Amrita Shergill exhibition that was at the institution when I joined the place. But the question whether female artists are represented in the program or not was not a topic of discussion at the time, or not much. And then there was this change of directors in Okui, and Wiesel became the director of Haus der Kunst. And he came to the institution laughing, and he was like, yeah, it's a wonderful place, and it's an institution that has such an outstanding international acclaim and that has hosted so many important exhibitions, has been so relevant for also thinking globally about art or cultural production as one of the few institutions in Germany at the time. But then there were two exhibitions by female artists in the institution. Wow. And that was it in the history of the institution since the 1940s. And that is really the person that came with the strong agenda to Haus der Kunst. And that was one part of his program that was very important. And for myself, I guess a really important key was our cooperation with the Sammlung Goetz. So with Ingrid Goetz's media art collection that she had started building in the 1990s. And without intending to do so, Ingrid Goetz had acquired more or less equal amounts of art by female and male artists. Yes. So without thinking all too much about it, she really had developed quite an exemplary collection on that level, just coming from an interest in the topics that she as a woman was confronted with. Yeah, so that was a very important touchstone for me.
And it also became more like a thing that was rooted in your consciousness, because before you said you were not even
thinking
aware of certain things, and then it came more and more kind of like to the surface.
Yeah, I guess that is just this very normal process of consciousness raising on many levels, right? I mean, we have these same discussions with all the questions of colonialism, I don't know, societal or class disparities, etc. It's really a matter of thinking about things in order to understand the structures and starting to change them. So yes, it would be unimaginable today to run a program that's only based on male artists. Luckily so, and there's so many great female artists, so it's not even difficult.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. It's so not difficult at all.
Yeah.
It's like you find them just everywhere.
Yeah.
And then was it a natural transition then to go to Sammlung Brandhorst?
Yes. I mean, in a way it was and it wasn't. I mean, Haus der Kunst and Sammlung Brandhorst or Museum Brandhorst are two very different institutions, right? Haus der Kunst was this Kunsthalle model that was very agile and flexible. It has this crazy big footprint of spaces. It really did do exhibitions that aspire to museum shows, very research-based. I mean, of course, the academic strand was super important for Okui's program. Mm-hmm. The ambition was very big. But what brought me to Museum Brandhorst was that I started working with collections at Haus der Kunst. So one was the Goetz collection, and the other one, very important for me, was the Dalet collection, a Belgian conceptual art collection that we had the privilege to exhibit for the first time. So Hermann and Nicole Dalet were these amazing conceptual art collectors from Brussels, and they started collecting conceptual art in 1966 with an acquisition of a Brotas work, and then they really closely accompanied the conceptual minimal movements until like the mid to late 1970s. And Chris Dercon had known Hermann Dalet for a very long time, Belgian fellow traveler, so to say, and had persuaded Hermann to show the collection, which Hermann had always rejected. He was like, I know the artworks, I don't even want to see them in my house. It's not a visual practice, it's really an intellectual practice. So he refused to exhibit his collection for a very long time. But then really, Chris and also Dirk Snauert, who was closely involved with Hermann, who had been the chairman of Wiels for a long time, helped this exhibition become reality. And yeah, I worked on the collection with Ulrich Wilmes and really digging into this group of artworks that very intelligent people, both in the case of Hermann and Nicole Dalet and of Ingrid Goetz, have put together, sparked this research interest in me. And I liked working with collections because you are confronted with someone else's view and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to make sense of it, not only for yourself, but also to explain what is it that brings together these different artworks and what are like shared interests, what are the undercurrents of such collections. And that's a part that I really enjoyed a lot. And I enjoyed a lot also in the Brandhorst collection when I started working at the museum.
Ingvild Goertz and Brandhorst and the Belgian collectors you just mentioned, they bring their own vision to the collection. Mm. So does that add something which is not there, for example, in the museum collection, which is established over decades or centuries?
I think it's there in museum collections as well for a specific period. If you dig deep into museum collections, you'll understand which directors acquired what.
Mm-hmm.
So you totally see what their perspectives on the art is. And it's not just a personal vision. It's really a vision of its time with all the flaws and failures, but also the great challenges, advantages, and also highlights of the specific times, right? And I guess in a private collection, you maybe have a bit of a more focused perspective on these things. And so it is very interest-driven. It is very much driven by a very personal notion of art and what art would mean and what kind of Kunstbegriff you would follow in a specific period. And that can be widely different. I mean, the Brandhorst started collecting in the early 70s, but their collection was an entirely different story from what the Dalets have been collecting. So that's really interesting to see how even in fairly parallel times and sometimes even with an overlap of the artists, two very, very different readings come out of it. And so, you know, you all have in both collections these very canonical figures and names, but at the same time, they come in a very different guise, in a very different narrative, and they present a very different picture of art at the specific time. And that is, I guess, the interesting thing that you get away from this idea that there is a thing such as one narrative or one reading of what art of a specific period is.
Mm-hmm. And for you, your interest in the humanities, was that also served by researching in those fields?
What do you mean?
Because you said each collector has their own narrative. They have their very distinct style. And so you can see a little bit how they tick as well. You have the art on one hand, but then you have also this, this personal collection, which probably also involves more freedom of choice because as a museum director, you have other responsibilities if it's a public institution.
Totally.
You know, and so I thought also because you said you were interested in the humanities, the arts always have a human touch anyway because humans make art. But also the collectors have this, there's a special psychology.
I would definitely not go through psychology. I rather see it as a sociological question. You know, all in these collections, what you see are questions of class. In many instances, you have questions of specific contexts in which people have been moving, of networks, of, I don't know, like critical groups that they're attached with or closely connected with. I guess these are the aspects that you really see reflected.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I would rather think through that vein than through the personal psychology of a collector. I guess it's always there. I mean, even we as curators, we're not objective people. Mm. Why should we be different than any other human being, right?
Absolutely.
But I guess you come with the strategies or methodologies of how to objectify your judgment in a way and how to, test your judgment against a broader ground because you have to, if you work for a public institution, you're required to justify what you're doing and to explain what you're doing. And I think that's a very just and fair requirement with regards to our work.
Sure, you have to always take this responsibility. And still, as you said, you know, you yourself come with it or everybody comes with it, wherever humans are involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you were quite engaged also in Munich because you were also on the board of various others, which is... which is an initiative, not only galleries, but also galleries that invite other galleries to show in their spaces and therefore enforce a collaborative spirit.
Mm. Yeah, I must say that I've been on the board only very recently. So it was merely a year and a year, which I left early now, basically through leaving Munich. It's a really wonderful initiative that was, I think, pushed forward in the first place by galleries, but from the very beginning, they did so jointly with institutions and jointly with off spaces. And that's really the special thing about this program and speaks to the very very nice and very special situation that exists in Munich, where really institutions, galleries, off spaces, artists, they understand that they operate on a level together and that it's important for an art scene to have a healthy infrastructure that goes through all levels, be it institution, be it non-for-profit, be it art market, and that these need to function and operate conjunctly in a good way in order for a city to be attractive for artists, but also for an art audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so this project has been running for 5 years now, I think, and every year there's a month of exhibitions where the art institutions, the off spaces, and the galleries team up, and galleries and off spaces actually invite guests from abroad to share space with them, to invite them to host exhibitions in their premises. And it's a really beautiful and nice way of bringing new partners, new conversation partners, people that we want to get to know to the city.
I was part of it 2 times, and I was quite impressed by the openness, but also actually by the professional organization. It was just very well done.
Yeah, I guess they would be very happy to hear that. And credit goes to the wonderful colleagues that run various others. It's quite a challenge because it really started from voluntary engagement, and it's a small team, and everyone's putting their heart and their life into it. So it's wonderful to hear.
They do their best, and it's a great initiative. And so, because in a way, in Düsseldorf, we have a similar situation with the institutions, with the Kunstakademie, which is luckily now run by 3 women, and with the gallery scene, some off spaces, a lot of artists that live here. So you're back here, you know it, but also you're back here in a very different time and position.
Yeah, it's true, but I'm very happy to be back. And I think one of the main differences that's really only become apparent to me when I started thinking properly about what it means to come to Düsseldorf was to realize that I'm coming back to a place that has this amazing art history that manifested here in the city in the 50s and 60s, and that has been so important for the development of the local understanding of contemporary art. But then that it's a city where so many artists still live that have been partners in these times and that have witnessed these times and that basically grew out of these developments and local art history and became these international figures and artists that represented what German art has been in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I think that's an extraordinary privilege. And then also the other really, really great thing, and that's a huge difference to Munich, is that Düsseldorf is not an island. Munich is really like the end of the one-way road. You have to go there because you want to go to Munich. Here you can happen to come to Düsseldorf because you want to go to the Rhineland. And you have all these great institutions and galleries and non-for-profit spaces, Kunstvereine, in all the cities around. And I think that's an incredibly rich and enriching environment to work in. You have so much input.
Yeah, we're in the middle of Europe in a way. It's like everything's around. It's Belgium, it's the Netherlands, it's France. It's everything is not so far away.
Exactly, exactly. And there's not many places in the world where you have such a situation. I mean, if you really think about the Rhineland as a metropolitan area, it's quite impressive to see the density of institutions, the quality of the institutions, the quality of the collections, even the quality of the collectors.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So you will be, or you now already are, an important part of what will shape the future of the bigger art world in the Rhineland, because Kunstsammlung Nordrhein-Westfalen is such an important institution.
Yeah.
And also developed so much over the past years since Susanne Gensheimer was director, with new focus and opened up very much to new ideas. And because we're all aware very much of this rich history of the Rhineland, but we also want to write it into the future, you know? So from here, like this exhibition was in the 80s, von hier aus.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the big 1980s shows. Yeah, it's interesting.
And this is something we, in a way, we desire for this so much here, because we know we have it here. Everything's here. You know, how to bring it into the world, how to bring it into an over-regional or international context. And that would be so interesting to see what happens. So what are your plans? What are you looking forward to?
There's super many things that I'm looking forward to, but I'm not speaking in terms of plans because my understanding or the way I've entered institutions in the last years, and that has proven very fruitful for me, is to really get to the place and get to know the place before I start thinking about what my big plans mm-hmm. for a place are. I really think it's important to understand the DNA and the structure of an institution. And as you say, Kunstsammlung is so interesting and so rich because it has already developed so much in the last years. I just flipped through a catalog from 2010 that's called Meisterwerke, so masterworks of the 20th and 21st century from Kunstsammlung Nordrhein-Westfalen. And there's literally not one single non-white, non-European artist in
yes.
this book. And that's barely 12 years ago. And if you look at the collection now, and how the acquisitions have developed, how the exhibition program has developed. It really feels like an institution that's totally aware of the discourses of its time and that kind of neatly, you know, relates back to a lot of discourses and things that have, of course, played a major role at Haus der Kunst, both already under Chris's directorship, but then, of course, under Aquin Wieser's directorship as well. So it's very beautiful to see this reflected in a collecting institution, which, as we all know, and I think in this case for the good, is a type of institution that takes more time mm-hmm. for processes to manifest or to become visible. And of course, an institution that, per definition, as it has a body of work, a collection that gives it its foundation, is slower in changing it from the inside out than an institution that can reinvent itself entirely with every new directorship. I think it's really impressive and great to see what Kunstsammlung has achieved in the last years. Mm-hmm. And I think it also reflects in this amazing network of collaborating institutions that they've been producing exhibitions with and touring exhibitions with. So it's really an institution that self-consciously wants to be embedded in an international network and discourse. And I really appreciate and admire that very much.
So you don't want to speak of plans. How can I imagine that you get familiar with the DNA of an institution, the DNA of a place? How do you find your path, not only around the institution, but also around Düsseldorf now? How can I imagine your day?
Oh, my day. Well, at the moment, I mean, I've been here, I think, for 7 weeks or so. So it's really a very short period of time. And that means that until now, I was mostly in conversation with people. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is really the way that I would say I go about. So I talked a lot to all of the colleagues in the institutions, both the people from my department, but also from the other departments, trying to understand how the processes and structures work. I'm looking forward to the quiet time between the years to finally get a moment to start reading and digging deeper in terms of the history of the institution, the exhibitions that were made, the catalogs, the discourses that were raised by the former exhibitions, to better understand how the collection history has developed over time. Of course, I know all of this roughly, but not so much in detail. And then, yeah, just reconnect with the city texture, with the people that are here, with the artists that are here, with the galleries that are here. So going around, seeing, talking to people, getting a feeling for the topicality, for the current discourses, for the current questions that are important here at the moment. And then there's all these amazing colleagues in the neighboring cities. So I guess many of us share like similar questions at the moment. Corona has been a very troubling and difficult time for the institutions. We're lucky to be in a context where there are still public institutions. And so differing from other countries, both in Europe and abroad, we still speak from a fairly safe position, but there has been a shaking of the institutions that kind of extends itself to the questions of energy crisis and raising energy costs and all of that stuff, ecological questions that will transform our institutions. So I guess at the moment, there's a lot of things that are in the air and that still need some time to settle and to clarify what running an institution in the future will be. They might be very different from what we know now.
Mm-hmm. And what would you wish, what you could add to the institution? Tough question.
Yeah, it's a really tough question. because it's also a question of ethics when it comes to, you know, wondering how important are you for an mm-hmm. institution. Of course, it's super important who works for an institution, what these people bring to the institution. But at the same time, I'm hesitant to start claiming these grounds because I think these are things that evolve naturally and in my case evolve in relation to what is there and what is probably lacking. So I can maybe speak more from the perspective of what I was able to bring to an institution like mm-hmm. Museum Brandhaus, which really necessarily had to open up and question itself in terms of the collection, had to get away from this very artist-centered, not in the sense that it didn't want to be centered on artists. I think that's the part that still remains, but of getting away from this like genealogy of the genius artists and really think more contextually about practices, thinking more in terms of feminist, Black or queer readings of a collection, how that could really change the way we looked at what we had in a collection there that was super male dominated. So I think these questions, thinking about the structures that constitute a collection, but also constitute an institution, these are things that I find super interesting. Think about the structure of exhibitions, thinking about the programs and understand what these programs are and how they could maybe be enriched or, on the other hand, be more specific in some places. It's really something that develops in relationship to what mm-hmm. is being thought there. And I mean, Susanne is doing such a great program here at the institution. And it's interesting to start thinking from that level in terms of how do we continue now that she has opened up the focus so widely and so wonderfully? How do we get us to the next level? What does it mean in terms of our collaboration partners? Whom do we want to be in conversation? How do we manage these challenges together? Because I guess all these questions are now less so than ever. They aren't questions that we solve for one institution. We really solve it in a network of institutions.
And it is, I think, very process-oriented because there is not one solution. There is not one way to talk about certain things. And also then to make a choice which artworks, which artists are included. Yes. How do you make that choice?
Yeah. It's a choice that you discuss, I guess, with every step that you take. Absolutely.
And is it only then intellectual driven, or is it because you were talking about curiosity and probably enthusiasm in the beginning? So is that still a driving force for you?
Oh, totally. I guess that's the moments when we are best. Mm-hmm. I mean, the intellectual rigor or the intellectual engagement with the programs has really the basis and the ground. And the moment you start loving and enjoying these really as an endeavor of curiosity, that's the moment when you get the most exciting results. And not just here, but really, I think in terms of the institutions, that's the moment where you start feeling that things are happening in an institution that cannot happen anywhere else. And that's probably what makes the most successful institutions.
Is it intellect or is there also intuition?
Both, I guess. I mean, they always work hand in hand. There is no pure intellect and there's no pure intuition. I mean, intuition is formed by your knowledge and formed by your complexity of understanding. And going back to these questions of feminism, I guess it's precisely this false dichotomy that feminism has fought for such a long time of undoing this hierarchy between the intellect and the intuition. I really think there is no way how you could separate the one from the other.
I think you really thrive for kind of like a pureness, to take the responsibility to be as objective as possible. But on the other hand, I also feel that especially you are a very warm and open and kind person.
Yes, I hope.
And that is something which I think is rare. Kindness. Kindness is something really rare. Not only in the art world, it is in the art world, but it's also in the world. Because I think it takes courage to be kind. It takes courage to be open towards whatever you're doing, in what field you're working, to the people that are working there, because everybody comes with their own baggage.
Yeah, I think the people is precisely the point that you're mentioning that is so important. I mean, I'm so humbled by every artist that decides to take that path. Mm-hmm. It's just the toughest job in the world. And I find it incredibly daring and incredibly provoking and super challenging. And I guess the one duty that I see I have is really to be very careful with it and to be very respectful mm-hmm. with it. It's a huge task that artists decided to take up. And so, yeah, I guess that is really a question of my ethics, that I want to honor that and that I want to respect that in the best possible way. And that means in terms of professionality, that means in terms of intellectual engagement, it means in terms of really curatorial support and care for what they're doing. And yeah, that I would definitely agree is a really important part of what I do.
Patricia, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Daniela.
Please find links and a text about my guest in the show notes. For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Visit our website van-horn.net and subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.